This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Something just isn't right with that intro music for today's show, Manchester United Fan Show on Love Sport Radio. Me, Matt Beadle, here with Ben Senior, Manchester United avid fan. Great to have you on the show, Ben.
Well, I'd rather be here after a win, but here we are again. United have ruined my day and my weekend.
I was going to say, we couldn't have picked a better weekend for you to make your debut. Before we go any further, you've got a great T-shirt on right now. Can you just talk the listeners through it?
Okay, well, I thought, after that loss, I can't really come in United full kit, full shirt. I thought that's too brave. So what it is, it's these guys, Art of Football. They do like sort of quirky designs. So what it is I'll try and describe it for you. It's like a bear, but a Manc bear. So he's got a parka on, bit of an Oasis haircut, and a United shirt. So we're repping United still, but on low key.
Low key. That is, of course, the 90-92 away kit with the blue and white. Brilliant. A great kit, of course. At great times for Manchester United, of which, at the moment, we have to say they are not. Lifeless, insipid, bereft of any creativity. Just a few words and terms to describe that performance. Of course, Manchester United did lose at St James's Park this afternoon against the Newcastle side, struggling for form with a manager under pressure, with a board under extreme pressure, and they've done Man United.
Yeah, I mean, The horrible thing as a United fan is now it seems like an all too familiar feeling. You go into a game and you're not excited by it. We don't look like we're going to score. The defence, okay, is all right, but we don't look like we're going to score on the pitch. You saw, we played two games now. Alkmaar, midweek, that Ollie came out and sort of said, oh, the plastic pitch, that was the excuse for that one. And now Newcastle. Now you're looking at them two games as a United fan and you're thinking, we should be winning those. Come on. And Newcastle, all credit to them, great fan base, a great historic club, but they were shambles at the start of the season, and they've managed, you're not telling me, if you put that United squad and that Newcastle squad together, that Newcastle should beat United. So it's just an absolute shambles. There's a total lack of desire, lack of organisation, lack of leadership, lack of motivation. Everything you need and expect from a United side was not there today.
It wasn't there today, and someone who is rather happy about that, I suppose you could say, is Matthew Ketchell of Match of the Day magazine and massive, massive, ardent Newcastle fan. Ketch, thanks for joining us.
No problem, Bede.
So, pretty happy, I would imagine.
You could say that. More shocked, I think, would be a better description of how I feel at the minute. I didn't see that coming at all. If you'd watched us against Brighton, if you watched us on Sunday against Leicester, there was no way we were going to perform like that. We actually, Bruce actually had them in for less training this week, and somehow, you know, it's a carbon copy of the Spurs performance. But I think we were probably more in control of this game than at Spurs, and probably deserved the 3 points.
So when you say you didn't expect it, though, Ketch, did you not potentially look at the way that Man United have been playing recently and think, do you know what, we might be able to nick something here?
Yeah, I did, and I saw the Arsenal game, and I thought they didn't look great, but I thought, there's a team where the expectation is so great. There's been a lot of money spent. I thought they have to get a win. They really cannot afford to come away from St James's Park with anything less than a win. And I thought there's a lot of quality there, international players, some experience there. I thought they'll get the job done. It might not be pretty, but I fully expected Man U to come and take the 3 points. When the game started, Newcastle started off on the front foot. And I thought, yeah, this looks good, but I think this will be a valiant defeat for Newcastle. That's what I thought would happen. I thought we'd give a good game and then be undone by a bit of quality or make a mistake. And it didn't happen. And in the end, it was probably Man U who made the mistake. And I think the biggest thing I can say is that I wasn't really worried until maybe injury time that Man U were going to get a goal.
Ketch, I'll just jump in. It's Ben here. A lot has been said about United at the minute that we've lost that fear factor. As an opponent and an opposition fan, coming today into the game, did you fear United? Did you think they were going to score against Newcastle, or did you think, okay, we're on for a result here?
I thought maybe there would be an improvement, a reaction from the Arsenal game and from previous weeks. But then the first 10-20 minutes, I thought, wow, there's nothing here. It's turgid. It was static. It was so slow. And if Newcastle were playing 5-4-1 without the ball, 3-4-3 with the ball, and when Man United had the ball, there was no threat. Rashford's touches in the first half were non-existent, and I didn't have any worries at all. And I thought this could probably peter out into a 0-0. When Maguire missed his header, I thought that's a big chance. I thought the first goal was absolutely key, and when we got it, I thought yeah, this is the game. Yeah, we're going to beat them.
Ketch, much has been made of the Longstaff brothers today, in particular Matty getting the winner. Of course, Sean was a player heavily linked with Manchester United in the summer. Apparently, we were led to believe a deal was very close to getting over the line. It didn't happen. The big thing today, I think, was the fact that Scott McTominay was in the United midfield. Sean Longstaff was in the Newcastle midfield. You'd say at the time when the news broke that Sean Longstaff might have potentially been moving to United, a lot of United fans came out and said, we've already got him in Scott McTominay. How do you compare the two, and who do you think won today, I suppose, if you could call it a match between the two of them?
Well, if you look at the first half, Sean Longstaff created four chances and the entire Man United team could only create three. So that paints a picture. And there was a similar situation with Longstaff last season when we played West Ham, and there was a bit of a Longstaff versus Rice build-up, and Longstaff did his knee in that game and Rice scored. So maybe Longstaff had that in the back of his mind again, going up against Scott McTominay, who was excellent on Monday, I thought, against Arsenal. Maybe Longstaff had that, and I think to have his brother alongside him would have just, you know, it would have just given him a massive boost, and, you know, he would have really been up for the game and really just tried to, you know, talk his brother through the game and respond to what was such a dreadful performance on Sunday. Sean Longstaff was swearing in the press after that. You know, he apologised, but he said, you know, it was such a bad game. His emotions got the better of him. So as a local lad, he'll have been really hurt by what happened on Sunday and all the fans who travelled and were really loud. And I think he's just responded to that and thought, you know, this is a club who were in for me, probably had his head turned. And I think the combination of that and his knee injury have led him to have a bit of a slow start of the season. And I think through the week, they'll have probably known that the Longstaffs were playing together since Monday because of team shape and whatnot through the week. And I think that's just raised his game. And he's really gone out there and had a brilliant. I thought actually Sean was man of the match rather than Matty, but Matty got it for his debut and for the goal.
I thought the Longstaff brothers myself were very impressive. And I think it just shows from a United point of view that them two absolutely dominated that midfield and dominated that game. But in every game this season, we just seem to have lost that midfield battle. If you're looking at the two teams today, how many of them United players do you think would actually get into that Newcastle side? Not just on quality, but on the motivation and the desire as well.
Well, I'm realistic. There's a lot of players from that Man United team that I would have at Newcastle. Maguire, I think he's got the desire and the passion, and Rashford, they're two players who know what it's about. But Man United, I mean, where is the midfield? What is Fred? What is he? I'm staggered. There's just no midfield there. And even when Pogba's been in the team, it's been non-existent. And I think it's crying out for a Declan Rice and a Sean Longstaff and no Man United. And the theme of recruitment that's been going on at the club recently, that's probably where they'll look as soon as possible.
Yeah, I thought that they would 100% be in for Declan Rice in the summer, to be honest, Ketch. That obviously didn't materialise. It didn't materialise with Longstaff either. There is one other way you can look at this game, I suppose, in the sense that United legend leading the Newcastle charge in Steve Bruce, it was just a bit of a favour. Was that not it? Just go on, Steve, get your first win. Or get a win, sorry.
Yeah, hey, well, listen, full credit to Steve Bruce. He's realised he doesn't know what he's doing. Just time to play like Rafa and you get a win. That's what happened at Spurs, and that's what's happened today. No, I'm joking. Bruce deserves a lot of credit because he's dropped probably on paper our best player, John Joe Shelby. He's dropped him and put a 19-year-old kid in there alongside a 22-year-old kid. That's a huge risk to put into a big game on TV against his old club, but he's made that decision and it's completely paid off. So fair play to Steve Bruce. I'm just dying to know what he's ordered for his takeaway tonight because he's going to go big, isn't he?
And just to finish it on that, Ketch, obviously he is an ex-Manchester United player, did a hell of a lot for the club. Will the tide turn towards Steve Bruce if he continues getting results like this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you win games, you're God's gift, aren't you? If he wins his games, then brilliant. But if he loses and if he puts in performances like we saw at home to Brighton, away to Norwich, away to Leicester, then that's when he's going to have problems. And the Geordie, being a Geordie, is no protection for him. This is a guy who, when we came so close to winning the title, I can't remember who won it that year, but Bruce was the captain of that team. And on the final day of the season, he was singing, you know, cheer up Kevin Keegan on the pitch at Middlesbrough. So the Geordie thing doesn't protect him. What protects him is wins. So if he can keep getting wins, then crack on. But it's going to be difficult. It's very going to be very inconsistent for Newcastle this season. But these wins against Spurs and Man United really help.
Ketch, top stuff, boss. Thank you very much for coming on this evening.
Pleasure. Cheers, lads.
Cheers, Ketch.
That was Matthew Ketchell of Match of the Day magazine. Understandably rather happy, of course, on that one. And interesting as well to hear what he says about Steve Bruce. And he's right. 95-96, he was on the pitch at Middlesbrough singing those lyrics. So that won't be forgotten soon by Newcastle fans. Just a couple of bits I want to finish on in this opening reaction to the Newcastle game. Of course, plenty more coming up. We're going to get Mark Flanagan, our Northwest correspondent, on the line very, very soon. But David De Gea going up for that corner, there were two moments right at the death that to me smacked of a desperation that we haven't seen from Man United for a long time. One was De Gea going up for the corner, and yes, do you know what? That's not too abnormal. You see goalkeepers go. How many times do we see Peter Schmeichel lumber into the opposition penalty area, and sometimes with success? But Scott McTominay going down under that elbow from Andy Carroll, you just thought, come on, lads.
You're clutching at straws, but even that David De Gea moment at the end, and you're just thinking, right, we've got a set piece here, and we had a number of free kicks in that last sort of 10-15 minutes. But my God, our set piece delivery is atrocious. I mean, Ashley Young, I nearly fell over because Ashley Young, I was watching the game today, and he took a corner kick and he actually found a man and found Harry Maguire and he missed that sitter. But apart from that, the delivery from out wide and from set pieces is just awful. You're looking at it, we've got Maguire, who is on paper the best aerial threat in the league. You're thinking from corners, from free kicks. If he gets his head on it, usually, I know he missed today, but usually you expect him to score. But we just haven't got that quality. Ashley Young, he started off the day as captain and Marcus Rojo ended the day as captain. So I think that in itself says it all. It was just desperation from start to finish. We didn't even start like a United side. And you're thinking, you go back to the days of Fergie, and I know we shouldn't always go back to the days of Fergie, but Fergie time, then last 10 minutes, and you think, right, get everyone on the pitch and we'll go for it. Now it's like, it's with a whimper. You go up and, all right, one ball will get put there and then it'll get put there. But there's no, you don't expect to score. And defences must be coming up against United and thinking, we've got an easy job today, boys. We've got Rashford, who didn't have a touch in the opposition box till the second half. So you're thinking, where's the threat coming from? You can't go through every game and win 1-0 or get a 0-0 because with Man United, you should be putting 2-3-4 past the likes of Newcastle and Alkmaar. So it is really gutless when you see a United side going up against a Newcastle side that were there for the taking really today and there to make a statement, and there just wasn't that desire and that cutting edge right when it mattered.
Yeah, you're bang on there, Ben. I think the aimless ball into the box has become something of a United staple, especially last Thursday against AZ Alkmaar. And you mentioned Harry Maguire as well, who you like to think it's only a matter of time before he gets off the score sheet. But he did miss a sitter today. Mm-hmm. He did miss against West Ham. Good save from Lucas Fabianski, but he should have scored that goal. And quite critically, no Man United player had more touches in the opposition box or attempted more shots in today's game than Harry Maguire. I think that says it all. It's the Man United Fan Show on Love Sport. Plenty more coming up.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
This is the Manchester United Fan Show on Love Sport. I'm Matt Beadle, joined by avid Manchester United fan Ben Senior. He's avid, but he's a bit aggy as well today, aren't you, Ben?
Aggy is the right word after that game.
I just want to touch on, so do you mind me asking how old you are?
I'm 24.
So 24. So I guess in a sense you are a new wave of United fan, kind of. You're supporting the club for what, 10, 15 years or so?
Well, you look at sort of 1999 is sort of in the memory but only sort of blurry as a kid. So, yeah.
Right, okay. So from the treble season onwards, you know, a period of success, I suppose you could look at 2004 to 2006 where the club didn't win anything but was still challenging and still in FA Cup finals, and of course then won the Carling Cup in 2006, and from then on the three in a row and all the way up until Fergie retired in 2013. So you've pretty much known success in your young supporting life. So in terms of your reaction to what's going on now, because we see a lot on Twitter, we see a lot on social media, we see a lot of conflict, whereas old United fans, and we had a gentleman on last week, Paul Dara, of a Twitter platform called United Before Fergie. Really interesting to talk to because he was there at a time before Fergie even arrived. You know, Tommy Doherty, Ron Atkinson, all the rest of it, and speaks about that time and speaks about it very fondly. It wasn't the most successful time in the club's period, but speaks about it very fondly. So he can be slightly more reasoned, I suppose, in his arguments. You hear a lot of younger fans, I'm not saying this is you, but you hear a lot of younger fans go, "We're rubbish. We've got to get rid of this person. We've got to get this player in." And there's not, I don't know, they're not almost looking at it objectively enough, I don't think. Where do you stand?
I mean, in a day where the sense is, especially with Twitter, you over your at, and Ollie out will be trending all over the world after that game today. But I don't know, from a personal point of view, this is one of the lowest moments, I think, as a United fan following the club. Obviously, growing up as a kid, my childhood, I only really knew United having success with Fergie. When you're talking about the likes of Ruud van Nistelrooy, Cristiano Ronaldo, you see sort of absolutely world-class talents come through Wayne Rooney and come through the club and then go on to make it and win Champions League finals and Premier Leagues and two, three Premier Leagues in a row. And you go into the trophy parades, remember them? Do you know what I mean? So it's like, as a United fan now, looking at it, since Fergie, it's just been organised or unorganised chaos, I'd have to say, because you look at it, David Moyes, okay, going to games when David Moyes was in charge, you felt like he wasn't quite up to the job, but the spirit was still there. I remember going to a United Champions League game when they played Bayern Munich, and we came out with a defeat, but you still felt like we played well and the faith was there. And I think Moyes got sacked not long after that. So then Van Gaal came in, and then it was like, okay, we play rubbish football, but we won an FA Cup. And then Mourinho comes in, and personally, I've always been a fan of Mourinho as a manager, and I thought that possibly after Ferguson retired, we should have got him instead of David Moyes. Obviously, at the time, I don't think that was possible. But you look at Mourinho, and to go from world-class manager to in Van Gaal to world-class manager in Jose Mourinho with their CVs, and they can't make it work. And now we've got Ollie in, and all Ollie talks about is the old DNA. And as a fan, yeah, okay, we like to talk about the days of Fergie and how United should be that attacking 4-4-2, and that's what United's all about. But he's the manager. He needs to be making his own mark on this team and showing us for what the future is of this club. Not going, oh, because there's only so far you can get with the United, the passion and the desire. But you need that something else to back it up. So at the minute, I think this is just, I just don't look forward to United games at the minute. And that is so sad. Because as a kid growing up, all you look forward to is the massive games. United Arsenal was the biggest fixture of my childhood. Mm-hmm. Watching Roy Keane come against Patrick Vieira, then fights in the tunnels, then games at Highbury, at Old Trafford. Even when Van Nistelrooy missed that pen, Martin Keane was in his face. You love to hate them. You watch that United Arsenal game the other week. I was bored. I could have fell asleep watching it.
Absolutely.
That just shows how far we've fallen.
Yeah, I think you're bang on. It is a very, very different ball game here. And we've got Mark Flanagan on the line right now. Mark, how are you doing? Our Northwest correspondent.
Evening, mate.
It's great to have you on. I'm sure you just heard Ben's assessment, really, of being a younger Manchester United fan at the moment. Very, very different, a very different side to the one that he first started watching.
Yeah, it's remarkable, isn't it? The drop off. It's shocking, actually. I'm a bit older than Ben, nearly twice as old. That's a big admission live on radio.
I'd never have thought it. Never thought it.
I was actually just thinking about the drop that Leeds had between sort of 2000 and 2004-05. I think it's when they were relegated, and they had players like Viduka and Smith and Ian Hart and Gary Kelly and a young James Milner. And you're looking at that United side and you're thinking, do you know what? They're not a million miles away from that kind of drop. You know, the relegation form that United have had since the PSG result is there for all to see. And I'm looking at it thinking, this could happen. This United side are that poor, they could quite easily get dragged into a relegation fight. They've got Liverpool at home next. They've got Bournemouth away, Norwich away before they play Brighton at home. And it's quite conceivable they could actually be in the bottom three when they come to face Brighton. I think it is on November the 20th. It is a shambles from start to finish. And it starts at Ed Woodward. And it finishes with the kind of comments that we've had again from Solskjaer tonight, saying things like, the boys are giving everything for the shirt. Well, if you're giving everything for the shirt, Harry Maguire, you run towards that ball like your life depends on it, and you don't flick a leg out allowing that midfielder to score, and little things like that. You know, I think Maguire's really gone off the boil, and I think his form, his dipping form since that really good performance against Leicester, is kind of indicative of what's going on. Solskjaer said tonight as well that that first half was the worst first half that he's seen while he's been at Manchester United. Well, that says a lot. We've seen some really bad halves of football in the last sort of 6 months. So, you know, that's how bad it's got. And who's to say it won't even get worse?
So, Mark, with reference to what you're saying about Maguire there, I think, you know, we've discussed him a bit earlier in the sense that probably should be off the mark with his goals account for United at the moment, but that's by the by. That's not really why he's there. In terms of leaders in this United squad, obviously Solskjaer was part of a squad with plenty of leaders. Harry Maguire, I consider to be one of those. But when you look elsewhere, especially in that starting 11, I mean, we can run through it now. De Gea, yes, a leader. Dalot, no. Rojo, no. Tuan Zebe, Young, no. Young, a leader of sorts, I suppose you could say, but not the leader really that you envisage being a Manchester United leader. Scott McTominay, potentially a leader of the future. Fred, absolutely not. Pereira, no. Mata, again, you look at him as a senior member, but a leader, not really. And then you've got Daniel James and Marcus Rashford. So when you look at that squad, it's really difficult to pick someone out who you think, and Ben, you mentioned Roy Keane, and I know that we always hark back to these old days, and Mark, it feels a bit like Groundhog Day on this Manchester United fan show with you at the moment, because we kind of keep going over that same old ground. But when you look at captains and leaders, United don't have many options in that department.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say. For me, the big find and the big positive for United this season is Tuan Zebe, who really does lead. And I mean that in watching him closely. He's verbal. He does lots of really good, positive things. He gets United out of trouble. And for me, Maguire's kind of almost gone into his shell a little bit. I was watching him today, and the amount of times that he took the ball forward and United and Newcastle were retreating, and he just passed it out to the left without committing a Newcastle midfielder or a defender. When you watched him playing for England in the World Cup, the amount of times he came storming forward and went past a player, which then created opportunities for other players, that's gone from his game. He's a safety first. He's become safety first in everything he does. And the way he kind of, well, didn't defend for that goal was, I thought, was really shocking. And you watch it and it just gets worse and worse with every viewing, the way he kind of limply strode out. Can you imagine Roy Keane or Pallister or Vidic or Jaap Stam? They'd have come charging out and they'd have thrown their bodies in front of that ball as if their life depended on it. And that's gone from United, because I think they've lost faith in the manager, they've lost faith in their ability. And at the end of the day, they're just not of the quality required. They are a mid-table team. I know they're shorn of five probably first-team players. We know the players. But even if you brought back Shaw and Pogba and Martial, I'm not sure, really sure it'd make that much of a difference. I'm not sure it would transform that team. I just think the soul has gone from the team. And that comes from Ed Woodward and the Glazers down. Those guys at the top have shown a complete ineptitude to a degree that I think if they'd have tried to destroy Manchester United, they would have struggled to make a better job. They have ripped the soul out of the club, and their lack of football knowledge is an absolute embarrassment. I was watching Fred today. £52 million they paid for that players. Is it any wonder that the Shakhtar Donetsk directors basically had a party after that Manchester United delegate? They started applauding and banging the tables after the Man United delegation left the room because they couldn't believe that United had paid £52 million for him. You know, from top to bottom, there's so much going wrong at United. It's easy to see how they could really get sucked into a relegation battle, never mind top four.
It's interesting you mentioned that. Yeah, the Shakhtar, there is the theory, isn't it, that they couldn't quite believe how Man United...
Yeah,
kind of
absolutely.
Stinks a bit of the Seth Johnson story when he was at Leeds, and you spoke about that era at Leeds when he went in with his agent and they were like, do you know what, we'll go in with 20 grand a week and see what we can get, and walked
well,
in
yeah,
to Peter Ridsdale's
office.
Well,
yeah, I know that story. Yeah, it was... his agent said, we're not going to accept any less than £25,000, so just keep your car... Don't say anything. It was Peter Ridsdale, bless him, and... Ridsdale's opening gambit was, we can't go any lower than 40,000. So Seth Johnson's agent sort of grabbed him and just looked at him and said, don't say anything else. So he got his £40,000 a year when I think they would have accepted 25. Yeah.
But just to mention, to go back what you said there, Mark, in terms of it does start in that boardroom level and with Ed Woodward, and you're saying how they sucked the soul out of the club. Do you think that today's modern player are keyed into that as much? So do you think that the likes of Pogba and Martial and Rashford are looking up at the board going, I tell you what, this isn't Manchester United anymore? Do you think it runs as deep as that with the players?
Yeah, I do. I think it does with some of them. I'm not sure it does resonate quite as much with all of them. I think they understand the direction of the club, and I think they understand that people at the top, like Ed Woodward and the Glazers, are massively out of their depth, and because they talk to their international teammates at Barcelona and Real Madrid and Bayern Munich and Liverpool and Manchester City, and they communicate a lot. They'll be texting each other, you can't believe what he said, what X has said. That happens a lot in football. Yeah, I think they, and obviously their agents as well, are very keyed into what's going on in terms of who are clubs who can be taken advantage of, and Manchester United have become the club to take advantage of. You know, Shakhtar Donetsk did it wonderfully when they got rid of Fred, and other clubs do it as well. So yeah, I think they do, absolutely. And I think, you know, when you've got someone like Pogba in the dressing room who's sort of very aware of his value, and it filters through. And I think there is a big issue that, you know, it's not just that they don't believe in the manager, they don't believe in the whole club, and everybody pulling the strings at their club knows exactly what they're doing. I think it's a big factor for players.
Matt, I'll just jump in here. You mentioned Tuanzebe today, and I think after today's game, if I was going to try and reach for any sort of positive, it's him. And like you said, he was a leader on
Definitely,
that pitch.
Yeah.
He was pulling Harry Maguire at times into position. Look at it, our squad at the minute, Mason Greenwood, Gomez came in, there's James Garner, that's sometimes on the bench, Tuanzebe. There is some good youth players there as well, Dan James that we bought in the summer. Do you think Ollie has what it takes to build that squad around them? And because at the minute, I'm thinking that Ollie thinks he's got a class of 92 on his hands, and that just isn't there. They're good players, but they need some world-class experienced players aside them. Do you think Ollie's the man that can build that squad?
Well, I'm not sure whether he is the man. I think the kind of separate issues, I've never believed, I mean, I've been doing this for Love Radio for quite a while and said very early on, I don't think he has quite got it in him. But I think that's a separate issue to the younger players. I think the big thing is that they're not the class of 92. There never will be another class of 92. And it was really interesting, actually, that Ed Woodward, when they announced the results, talked about going back to youth and the ethos of United. And, you know, this is United's DNA. But the problem is, if you haven't got the players to back it up, you haven't got the young players coming through, you know, like Chelsea, they could blood the three or four younger players because they've played in the Championship and they've got that experience. But are we saying that, you know, Chong and Gomez are really up for it? Well, we've got no idea. So you can't put your faith, it's stupidity of the highest order to put your faith in players when you've got no kind of knowledge that they're actually going to live up to it. We don't know if Garner's good enough. We don't really know if Greenwood's good enough, really. You know, what happened with Macheda? You know, we thought Macheda was going to be brilliant after three or four games. It didn't happen. None of those players have got a track record in first team football of being any good. So for Ed Woodward to come out and say, we're going to base it around youth, well, that's okay, Ed, if you're going to be struggling in the bottom half of the table for the next 2 years. You understand that. But he doesn't understand it. He's just got blithely saying things like that, without any kind of foresight and thinking about, well, how good are these players? Are they as good as Chelsea's kids? Are they as good as City's kids or Liverpool's kids? Well, we've got no idea. And that's the problem. It's just another example of the lack of football knowledge at the top of the club, which is filtering through. Because obviously the era of Fergie covering up the cracks for the Glazers is long gone. And, you know, Mourinho saying my greatest achievement arguably was taking that squad of players to second. Well, we all laughed when he said it. Well, actually, it makes a lot of sense now, because he had issues with Ed Woodward. He wanted to sign certain players and wasn't allowed to sign them because they wanted players with resaleable value, and he wasn't allowed to sign players in their late 20s. Well, you know, Mourinho knew they didn't have the players. And, you know, it's really coming home to roost for Manchester United now. All the problems are piling up and they're piled up on Ole. And you could probably have the greatest manager. You could have Pep in there now and it would take him a long time to sort it out. You know, I really feel for Ole because he's got a hell of a job on, because he wanted other players to come in that didn't come in. He didn't want to sell, you know, I'm not sure he really wanted to sell Lukaku, but he didn't really fit in. I think he wanted Lukaku to stay. But, you know, this is the difficulty that he's got. And it's you know, it's all piled on top of him now. And I'm, you know, it's when things go wrong, it's a lots of different reasons why they go wrong. And it's partly Ole, but it's mainly 5 or 6 years of ineptitude at the top of the club.
Yep, it is definitely going to take a long, long time, Mark. Will Ole Gunnar Solskjaer be afforded that? We don't know. I can't believe, by the way, you've pulled Federico Makeda out of your backside there. That is great. He wasn't, of course, a great player for Man United, but he will always give us Aston Villa. What a moment that was. It's the Manchester United Fan Show on Love Sport.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
This is Love Sport Radio. This is the Manchester United Fan Show. I am Matt Beadle, joined by Man United fan Ben Senior. If you want to join the debate yourselves, it's 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number as well, or tweet us at Love Sport Radio. We also have Mark Flanagan on the line as well. And I'm just going to start this one, fellas, with a little stat, because we always like a little stat. And it's one that we actually keep referring to, or has been referred to a lot in various media outlets over the past week or so. And that's the fact that United now just have 9 points from their 8 Premier League games this season. That is the lowest total after the first 8 games of a season since 1989-90. Now, before we move on, we all know what happened in 1989-90. Manchester United won their first trophy under Sir Alex Ferguson. The next season, they won the Cup Winners' Cup. The next season, they won the Super Cup and the League Cup. The next season, they won the Premier League. And the next season, they won the double. And the rest, under Sir Alex Ferguson, was history. So my point here, chaps, is this just a good omen? Ben?
Goodness me. Sorry, Ben. I was going to say that is some clutching at straws.
Well, you've got it. You're in desperate times, Mark. You've got to do that, right?
Can I throw in one more stat as well?
Go for it.
Just before Ben takes the floor, you mentioned talking about the set pieces, Ben, before. It's 220 days that Manchester United have gone without a set piece goal.
Staggering.
Doesn't surprise me at all. Literally doesn't. But I'll go back on the Ole to Fergie comparison. And this has been doing my head in, to be honest, because over the past week, there's been a lot on, especially Twitter, where people have said, oh, don't worry, it was like this at the start of Fergie's era. But before Alex Ferguson came to the club, and I know I wasn't around myself around that time, but you know, he was a serial winner before he even stepped foot in that door at Manchester United.
That's a very good point, Ben.
He had the experience. I mean, he took an Aberdeen side to beat Real Madrid in a cup final. So you can't compare the two. Ole, on his CV, all right, as a player for Man United, he was a legend and he scored that winning goal in the Champions League final. But you look at it and he's got Mulder and a relegation with Cardiff. So you can't compare the two as a manager. One is the greatest manager, arguably, that this game has ever seen. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, I mean, he's got the passion, he's got the desire, but I'm starting to doubt whether there's much behind that.
And I tell you what, before you cut in, Mark, one of those guys who has presented that argument is Peter Schmeichel, who today has had a right old go on Twitter today, I tell you. What a day Peter Schmeichel has had on Twitter. With regards to that argument, he has said, before we all go mad about what needs to be done and get carried away on how bad, and he's put that in inverted commas, how bad it is, let's just remind ourselves of how long it took Sir Alex Ferguson to create a winning team. At Man United, building success takes time. He's congratulated Steve Bruce, fine, ex-teammate, that's fine. But earlier on in the day, during the game, Peter Schmeichel tweeted, James, Rashford or Greenwood, one of them will get the winner. Who do you think? It was literally 20 seconds before Matty Longstaff struck in the winner. So, Mark, not the best day for Peter Schmeichel on Twitter, but in terms of that comparison yourself, what do you make of this Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Sir Alex comparison?
It's just nonsensical. It's meaningless. It's irrelevant. It's unhelpful as well in many respects. You know, it's like saying, "Oh, I can't think of a comparison really, because what happened with Ferguson just happened. He came up against a great Liverpool side, and you know, George Graham had a really good Arsenal team, and it was the landscape of English football was completely different. You know, he had an owner who knew what he was doing. He had money to spend. He was able still to attract the best players. You know, even when the going was tough, he'd managed to get Pallister. He'd spent a record fee on Pallister.
Well, it was that summer as well, wasn't it? It was the summer we're talking about. It was the 89-90 summer when he spent £7 odd million.
Yeah, and Paul Parker and Neil Webb, and I think it was that
Mike Phelan.
That year. So Mickey Phelan, yeah. Danny Wallace, not the greatest example. But the comparisons are so daft, and I just wish that we could sort of move on. And I think the best thing United could do really is take a break from sort of Alex Ferguson, whether it's a past player. You know, the great managers, if you look at their connections with the clubs who they became great with, even Matt Busby and Alex Ferguson had no connection with Manchester United when they moved in. Mourinho at Chelsea, Wenger at Arsenal, Shankly at Liverpool. You know, they've had no connection. And what Liverpool did when they got Klopp was get someone with a great track record who had no connection with the club. And that's what United's starting point has got to be. And I think it goes above Ollie. It's got to be number one, a director of football with no connection with Manchester United, but as a fantastic pedigree. And that's got to be, you know, it sounds so simple. United are unable to execute it.
It does, Mark. It does sound brutally simple. And I guess you can look at this in two ways in terms of the board clearly made it clear that they were looking for someone in that role. Now, is it good that they're taking their time to try and find someone, or is it bad that they seem to be dilly-dallying and, like you said, not really knowing what it is they're looking for?
Yeah, and you do worry that this thing that's been mentioned a few times that I've heard as well, that Edward likes the control and he likes the being able to have an influence on football matters. But, you know, he's an investment banker with an accountant's background. I wouldn't begin to start to tell him how to, you know, run his investment portfolio. You know, just be sensible about this. You're a very good commercial animal, and understand that your strength. You know, he's got this guy called Matt Judge, who's the chief negotiator in terms of transfers, which is good. But Matt Judge is an investment banker who worked at the same place that Ed Woodward did. He's brought his mate in. So when you're managing a big organisation, your people you have around you kind of fill in your skills gaps. But he's taking the completely different view of just appointing someone who's just like him to do a job which is absolutely critical. And it's just ludicrous that they've got nobody up there who's got a football background. You know, for a club of that size and an organisation, you know, who are turning over 600 million, who are the biggest sports franchise, inverted commas, in the world, who are running this way, it's laughable.
I mean, I couldn't agree more on the Ed Woodward stuff. And I thought they had the cheek the other week to come out with the record revenue that United have now made. And I thought that is just like waving it in the fans' face, the state of the team at the minute. But this director of football, I mean, it was rumoured to be happening the end of last year. And then when Solskjaer came in, it was like, right, we'll get the structure in place and we'll do this properly. But do you know is it still a thing that they're planning to do? Is it ever going to happen? There seems to be, I mean, Rio Ferdinand, Darren Fletcher, all these, if you've ever played for United, you've been linked with a job, but is it actually going to happen? And who is the person that gets that structure in place? Is it Woodward, or is there a team around him? Do you know sort of if the club is still trying to do that?
They are actively looking for one. I've not heard anything to say that they're not actively looking. And Van der Sar is one. Is a name that keeps cropping up, who does have pedigree. Obviously, you can see what he's done at Ajax in conjunction with, you know, that team that they have. So I think if Van der Sar became available, he kind of ruled himself out. I think it was about a month ago he said he didn't want to leave Ajax. So, you know, that's the calibre of people they should be looking at. And obviously, he's got a United connection as well, which is, for me, it doesn't really matter. The fact he's doing it at Ajax is the critical thing. The fact he played for United is incidental. And officially they are still looking, but your guess is as good as mine in terms of how hard they are looking. That's the critical thing. How much of a priority is it? And who are they going to get with a club on the slide? You know, if United are bottom half of the table in January, it just makes it even harder. The great thing United have always got up their sleeve is the financial muscle. Who's to say in 5 years that's going to be overtaken as well? You know, they've got to be really, really careful. The next 2 or 3 years are critical for the long-term future of United.
Mark, it's been a pleasure having you on, as always. Before you go, I've got to ask you the question, does he stay or does he go?
Who? Ed Woodward.
Well, I think I know the answer to that one. Mr. Solskjaer.
I think in the long term and in the short term, it would be beneficial for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer not to be Manchester United manager. Yeah, so I would get rid of him now, because I just think whoever they brought in couldn't do a worse job, really.
Wonderful. Mark Flanagan, our North West correspondent, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Matt.
Cheers, Mark.
That was Mark Flanagan. This is the Manchester United Fan Show. I tell you what, after the break, I know it's the international weekend coming up, but we're also looking ahead to one heck of a game against Liverpool.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
This is Love Sport and the Manchester United Fan Show. I'm Matt Beadle, joined by United fan Ben Senior. It's the international break coming up, and after that, Manchester United play Liverpool. Ben, I tell you what, this is something of an epic clash, and a clash no less. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has come out and basically said, is the perfect one for us. Do you buy into this, or are you quaking in your boots?
I mean, I don't think I'd go that far, but when he said that, you sort of just cringe a little bit, because he seems to have a track record at the minute of coming out with these statements after games of being like, no, the boys are playing for the shirt, the next game will have it. And then you just know it's going to blow up in his face. And Liverpool, I mean, he says it's the perfect game next, but I am fearful of it. You look at our back four, okay, if they're all fit, I had faith in them. But that midfield battle, we've not won a midfield battle all season. Apart from, you say, okay, Chelsea, first game of the season, when we all thought, yeah, run for a good season here. And after that, we've just gone away. And Liverpool, the way they're playing at the minute, they seem to be getting all the luck with the penalty in the last minute. They seem to be playing well. They've got players on form. I do fear for us. But, I mean, the only hope I try and hold on to is that it's not away from home. Because I saw a stat this week, and I'll throw it at you, that Bury have won more recently away from home than Manchester United, and they are no longer a football club.
It's been since February, isn't it? United haven't won an away game in the Premier League since February, which is quite a remarkable stat for Man United. We know the stats about how many wins it's been since the PSG game that keeps cropping up. Records just keep piling up from that PSG game, and I, for one, it's gone through my head over and over and over and over. I've tried to rack my brains as to just what has happened there, because when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer took over at Manchester United, he got the team playing a brand of football whereby we all looked and went, oh, OK, well, we knew this team was there. Jose Mourinho was Jose Mourinho. He was quite a bitter, twisted old manager now, and these players are playing the way they want to play. They then went on that incredible run, won at Spurs. You thought, right, that's the big game. Winning away at Spurs, 11 saves from David De Gea. You thought, right, they're going to go for it now. They did. They beat PSG. And then the wheels came off, pardon the pun, which is now a pun because Ollie was at the wheel. And I can't figure it out now, winning 4-0 against Chelsea. And look, Chelsea were in that game in periods, and maybe they just needed that transition from the start of the season. They're now showing that they're capable and probably going to challenge for that top four spot. With regards to United, I can't explain it. I just cannot explain it. And when you look at what Liverpool are doing, yes, they're getting results. I mean, I know you said they're playing well. They're not playing that well. That's the scary thing. And that's where United were always so successful back in the day. They wouldn't play well and they'd still nick a win. The fact that Liverpool are getting these decisions in the dying moments of games just suggests that it's going to be their season. The fact that City lost today, 8 points now, you can't see that gap being closed, especially not after what Liverpool experienced last season with it when they had the 9-point lead on City. So you can't see that happening. Like you said, it is at home, where United haven't lost to Liverpool since 2014, of course, in David Moyes' first season. So they've got a good record, but my fear with these records is that they're always there to be beaten.
Yeah, I mean, that's the scary thing. And at the minute, it seems like there's a different record being beaten every week of how we've not got enough points, or it's the worst season since years gone by. So you do look at it, and you look at the two teams, and quality-wise, we are just not there. A few seasons back, and you're talking only really 18 months ago, United came second, and you put that United side against that Liverpool side, and you'd say, do you know what? I'd fancy us. Okay, Mourinho was in charge. It wasn't the best kind of football, but we were winning trophies. We were winning Europa Leagues. We were coming in the top four, and you wouldn't really split United and Liverpool. You'd probably just put United ahead of them. How has that come to this? Where now we just look so much worse. Liverpool, top of the league, like you say, they look like they're running away with it already, and I'm booking my holiday for May already because yeah. I can't see Jordan Henderson lift the Premier League title. I just can't do it to myself. So you're almost glad there's an international break, and I never thought I'd say them words. But United against Liverpool, do you know what? You'd hope that the players will be up for it. Today, they didn't look up for it. They didn't look up for it. And you can blame the board, and you can say the transfer strategy and everything, but today, the manager, whether he got his tactics right or wrong, the players didn't perform on that pitch. So you're hoping against Liverpool, if we can't be up for that match and we can't get up for it, then we might as well just give up now.
And there's some strong comments as well coming out after this game. Gary Neville speaking his usual speak on Sky Sports, saying that it's a bit of a debacle. Jamie Redknapp basically saying that the fear is United. And this is the argument that will really hurt United fans, are going to become the Liverpool of the late 90s, early noughties. You know, Liverpool haven't won that title for 30 years. And we saw the transition they've had to go through to get to that. And that's 30 years. We're talking, what, 2059? My maths is terrible. before United would even to think of getting a Premier League trophy. David De Gea after the game today, it is not acceptable. Not just this game, but the whole season. It is the most difficult time since I have been here. I don't know what is happening. We cannot even score one goal in two games. I mean, those are really strong comments.
And that's your senior players coming out and say that after game. Mm. But it seems like it's a different player each week. I'm sure last week it was Scott McTominay that was coming out and he was being the lead and saying, no, look, we need to be better next week. But it's all well and good saying that in press conferences. And all he can come out after the game and say, no, the boys are playing for this shirt, they'll be back next week. But you can't keep doing that. You've got to show it on the pitch. And what style are United at the minute? Are we a counter-attacking team? Are we a possession-based team? Are we an all gung-ho attacking team? I don't know. I really don't know. You watch United and look, with a lot of teams and the best teams in the world, you look back to United, great teams in the past, you look to Barcelona, even Liverpool now, they could play with 11 white shirts and you'd know who was playing. You'd know it was a Liverpool side by the way they play. United, who are they? We've just, the biggest thing is we've lost our identity. Mm. As a football club, as a team, we just look lost. And from start to finish, from David De Gea saying that, from the pitch level to the boardroom level, it's a total lack of leadership, lack of direction. And just no one seems to know what they're doing when they get on that pitch.
Yeah, and the identity is huge, I think. And I mentioned the two bits towards the end of the game in injury time with Scott McTominay and David De Gea coming up for the corner kick looked a bit desperate. I think the two bits of quality that United didn't have towards the end of the game also really typified what they've been about this season. Firstly, Fred miscontrolling that simple pass from Andres Pereira, and Pereira's face was quite the sight. But then Pereira himself had the opportunity to float in that free kick. And you talk about the United of old, that was it. It will come. We'll get the goal. Something will happen towards the end of the game. You'll always get a chance. That's what Sir Alex, without having to go back to that argument, always used to say. You will always get a chance. He had the chance with the free kick and it was a terrible, terrible delivery. Ben, we've come to the end of the show, my friend.
Thank you. It's been like therapy.
It really has. It is the international break next week, but we will be back with the Manchester United fan show on Love Sports, same time on Sunday at 9 p.m. Thank you for joining me, Ben.
Thank you very much.
We will see you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.